On the radio, if we take you into the world of Mark Sutton from San Francisco, he's got an advantage. We are at the mercy of what we can hear, if we can even identify it. On the radio, we're blind. Mark Sutton lives with blindness, but he has a cane.
I feel more independent using a cane. That's just me, because I've been doing it all my life. And yeah, I like getting information with a cane that you can't necessarily get with a dog.
Sutton from Berkeley, California, has been blind for his entire life, but his cane has limitations. On big city public transportation, in crowds of sighted people, he is at the mercy of the commuter mob.
A lot of experimentation, a lot of trying different spots on the train, and then you get out, and then you're trying to find, where's the nearest escalator? Okay, it's over here. Where's this going to take me? Oh, I hear a fare gate over there.
Mark Sutton could read Braille signs in the station, but then he would need his cane to find them. Blind consumers have discovered a hack, though, to open the world to the blind, a fusion of wireless technology, GPS location technology, and voice recognition. The technology was created for the advocacy group Lighthouse for the Blind and designed at the Smith Kettlewell Eye Research Institute. With Mark at our side at the BART Rapid Transit Station, we suddenly don't seem so blind.
These maps provide tactile, audio, and large print information that helps a blind person orient themselves to the BART system.
And this world works without Braille symbols.
One of the things that the pen does is it allows you to use these maps if you don't read Braille and you don't read large print, and it can in some instances give you more information than the Braille has room to tell you.
Mark explains that the talking system delivers much more information much more rapidly than Braille.
So all that it says in Braille is the letter B. If I put the pen down here.
Bus stop on north side of driveway south of concourse. Buses from this stop. AC Transit 99 and 801.
So you get a lot more information about what bus actually stops there and where it is, because there's one, two, three, four bus stops adjacent to each other.
So let's go along with Mark on a BART ride to see how it all works.
Our starting point will be the Rockridge station. We'll get off here at college at the bus stop, right at the BART station, and we have
stairs up to concourse.
Stairs up to concourse, or
escalator up to concourse.
And then if I walk straight ahead,
escalator up to platform.
The escalator up to the platform. Fourth Street should be just behind us.
US IOS, 35 voices. Estonian, Finnish, IOS, German, Deutsch, IOS.
So what this program does is it'll just tell you points of interest that are nearby.
St. Patrick Catholic Church, 195 feet at 9 o'clock.
Are you feeling lost? Well, Brian Bashan, Executive Director and CEO of San Francisco's Lighthouse for the Blind, says that with an abundance of wireless bandwidth in some communities, the blind can become more independent through a form of digital pirate radio.
20 years ago, we started hacking the missile defense GPS stuff and started making talking GPS. Used to be in a huge laptop in a backpack, but it talked, and we could walk around the environment and learn a little bit of something. Now that talking GPS is in our shirt pocket, in our iPhone. And because of it, I can walk miles in routes that I've never been, knowing that I'll get cued just as a driver does, with street directions, turns, distances, information about what's there.
How much will it take, do you think, for this technology to be everywhere, for people to expect that this kind of technology is going to work for people with all kinds of sensory impairments?
There are multiple companies looking at indoor navigation, names you've all heard of. There is no standard right now. But one possible way it may all tie together is with the use of eye beacons. These are little coin-sized transmitters that are everywhere. They're going into the marketplace now because companies want to sell stuff to passersby. But the blind community has figured out that we can use these same technologies as markers, and so we can know what stores are there, what turns are there. As I come off the gangplank at San Francisco International and walk into the airport, I know where every ATM is, where is the wine bar, the men's room, the electronics store, the baggage, the carousels, all of that to an unprecedented level of detail.
And you can navigate your way in San Francisco Airport because Terminal 2 is completely outfitted with these iBeacons.
That's right. There are about 500 of those things studded all over the airport, pretty inconspicuous. My phone will tell which direction I'm looking at. I can point it in a direction, and it'll tell me what's down that corridor. I can search for restaurants. I can search for information. The experience is like no other, and after just walking down the terminal and getting out to the front door and then finding ground transportation, all of a sudden I'm in the iBeacon-less environment, you know, the rest of the world, and it feels so impoverished compared to that wonderfully dense, articulated environment.
You know, you raise an interesting point because a lot of the problem in the last 50 years of applying technology to people with disabilities is that it somehow clashed with the way they were doing things before, that individuals improvised their own sort of configuration and they didn't necessarily want to give that up. How does this technology almost instantly transform people who use it from what they were doing before to what they can't imagine not doing now, as you've described with the iBeacon?
Well, it's not an instead of, it's an addition to. And so we still have a major struggle to get blind and visually impaired people, you know, 200-300 hours of training in the techniques of blindness, the long white cane or a guide dog. Most people don't have the chance to get sufficient training in this regard. But if you do, and increasingly more people do, these new technologies really add to what you can do and your self-confidence about going anywhere in the world. I mean, it's for me to be able to walk in another country and use that same iPhone to find out stores and streets and the maps is just something I would never do a few years ago. You know, there's an irony here that, you know, your thermostat might have an IP address. You know, in the Internet of Things now, everything is going to be connected. Well, we want to be connected with that. For us, it's like the world is lighting up now with points and information and richness that supplants and enriches our traditional ways of getting around.
Tell the story of Uber, and do you think it would be important for the federal government or the FCC to establish standards of bandwidth that when you create these wireless environments that a certain component of that environment has to be compatible with some of the systems you're talking about, that sort of thing?
It's a good question. Right now it's the Wild West, but Uber is a perfect example. Uber has been a huge increase in the autonomy and freedom for blind people. We know where our taxi is. We have a record of it. It's secure.
But Uber wasn't aware of the need and the dependence that blind people had developed over some of their software when they suppressed some of the hearing-related voice apps on Uber, and suddenly blind people were left dependent again.
That's right. These are evolving technologies, and we see with almost any app, it works and then it doesn't work, and it works and doesn't work. And that's why the Lighthouse in San Francisco really wants to be at the table with the engineers in early times so that the next design and the next product cycle doesn't inadvertently leave us out.
Brian Bashan is CEO of the San Francisco Lighthouse for the Blind.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.